Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, January 4th, 2022. The Speaker of South Sudan's Transitional Legislative Assembly appoint chairpersons for specialized committees.
For us to proceed with these bills, we need to have the specialized committees in place, because for the last few months we have been operating on the basis of select committees.
And some members of the Anglican Church exchange blows during a Sunday service in Lake State.
There's one of the priests, he did not talk very well. This is when the problem occurred. So they were fighting, and actually we apprehended them and we put them to police.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Transitional Legislative Assembly has nominated leaders to head some specialized committees in the parliament. The nominees are largely from two parties, the SPLM and the SPLM-IO. The Speaker of the House says other political parties did not submit their list of candidates on time. David Monodanga has the details for VOA from Juba.
House Speaker Jema Nunu Kumba says having specialized committees will help the parliament handle urgent matters such as finalizing an overdue national budget.
For us to proceed with these bills, we need to have the specialized committees in place, because for the last few months we have been operating on the basis of select committees. But the budget needs the committees to be in place. For that matter, we have received the nominations for specialized committees and deputies, specialized deputy chairpersons from the SPLM and the SPLM-IO.
John Aganyi Deng, the new head of the Information Committee, says chairpersons of the specialized committees will focus on implementing the 2018 peace agreement.
The government is doing its duties according to the constitution and agreement. We will all be there to implement the agreement, because each and every South Sudanese need peace. So we will not any time then allow anything to happen, because our president has been committed himself. He has committed himself to implement peace. So, of course, together with him, we are going to implement the peace agreement. And I think in the coming short periods, our South Sudanese people will enjoy the dividend of peace.
The nominated heads and their deputies are from two parties, the SPLM and SPLM-IO. Speaker Kumba said the other political parties had not submitted their list of candidates for nomination on time because of what she called technical difficulties on their part. Deng says the parliament is not to blame for the delay by the other political parties.
There is no any party which bring it on list and people refuse to announce today. No, they did not bring. They are on process to bring it. If they have brought it this morning, in the next sitting, they will be announced. Because we have nothing to hamper anybody. Anybody will take the chair. What I know is that the list was not actually ready up to the time we came to this sitting. So definitely, it is their problem. It is not an assembly problem. It is individual parties who did not bring their members to the attention of the right honorable speaker to announce them.
Albino Akol is the spokesperson of the other political parties. Akol acknowledges that his party's nominations were not ready at the time of the appointment of the heads of specialized committees.
Yeah, it is simply that people have not yet agreed on how to distribute it among the OPP and for nomination. Just like that. There is a little time to agree first. Then, after agreeing, you know, OPP is composed of what people will have to agree first. Then they will now make nomination and then they will submit it.
Edmund Yakani, Executive Director of the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or CEPO, and signatory to the Revitalized Peace Agreement, says the nomination of leaders to head specialized committees marks the end of what he calls the ceremonial parliament. Yakani says Parliament should hold the executives accountable because South Sudan has been operating without a national budget for too long.
This parliament must stand to rescue the country from the collapse in terms of lack of smoothly and speedy implementation of the revitalized agreement. Because the only political framework right now that makes political legitimacy in terms of a government, whether they call government of national unity, is based on the agreement. The collapse of the agreement is a collapse of the government. So I'd like to call upon this parliament to stand its independence role and to make sure that they hold the executive accountable. We have been seeing 2 years executive operating without a budget. So right now we need to see this parliament standing up to see the budget. And the budget must be so much focusing on service delivered to the citizen rather than really where we see security take almost 50% of the budget.
Yakani says the government should prepare budgets for security to speed up the graduation of unified forces. The transitional government of national unity is far behind the schedule outlined in the 2018 peace agreement. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
South African investigators say a fire on Sunday that destroyed significant parts of Cape Town's historic parliament may have been caused by arson. A 49-year-old suspect is due to appear in court Tuesday in connection with the fire after police say he was found in possession of stolen goods. Vicky Stark reports from Cape Town.
Brigadier Nomthandazo Mbombo from the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, also known as the Hawks, listed the charges against the suspect.
A 49-year-old suspect was arrested and charged with housebreaking and theft, arson, and will also be charged under the National Key Point Act. The suspect was allegedly caught with suspected stolen property after he gained entry to the Parliament precinct in Cape Town unauthorized. He was spotted by members of the Protection and Security Services when they noticed the building was on fire.
The National Key Points Act deals with safeguarding certain installations against sabotage or other hostile acts. Natasha Mazone, the chief whip of the main opposition Democratic Alliance Party, spoke outside the Parliament gates.
We now know that the water sprinkler system was turned off, so clearly it was a designed destruction of our Parliament. As I look up, I could cry, and what gives me hope is that the statue of Madiba stands strong and was untouched by the fire. And he's looking on as we rebuild, and we will rebuild, and we will be a better parliament than we were before.
By Madiba, she was referring to the late South African President Nelson Mandela. Officials, including Cape Town's mayor, offered potential meeting sites for parliament.
Mayor Jordan Hill-Lewis, the mayor of Cape Town, has offered his city council chambers as well as the city hall, which seats over 1,000. We also have the virtual platform, which we all become very used to. But sit we will, and to hold the government to account, we certainly will.
Public Works Minister Patricia de Lille addressed the media at a briefing at Parliament Monday afternoon.
The temperature inside the building is still plus minus 100 degrees Celsius, down from what it was yesterday at over 400 degrees Celsius. But what they've done in the meantime is to use a drone that they are putting inside the building to assess the structure of the building until the temperatures can cool down.
She said a team of engineers has been brought on board and will focus on the repairs that need to be done, the cost and the time it will take for completion. De Lille said they've also brought in a fire expert who will determine exactly where the blaze started, together with a fire forensic team.
We are being informed by the professional teams that we can expect a preliminary report by Friday morning about their preliminary findings. And that report will then be shared also with Madam Speaker and the presiding officers. And we will then decide together what to do. And once we've seen the full extent of the cost.
The suspect is due to appear in the Cape Town Magistrates Court on Tuesday. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town.
Authorities in Lake State's Aerial County have detained more than 10 internally displaced persons for taking part in fighting between supporters of the dismissed Bishop Ruben Akurdi and the Archbishop and Primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, Justin Badi Arama, on Sunday. The Aerial County Commissioner says many people were injured when members of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan in Minkaman ID camp fought with sticks during a Sunday service. He says the instigators of the violence, which includes some pastors, will answer charges in a court of law. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
A church service in Lagos State's Awerial County turned violent over the weekend when some rival members of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan began fighting each other during the service. Awerial County Commissioner Simon Jongeng says worshippers at Zone 2 Church in the Minkaman IDP camp exchanged blows.
There is one of the priests, he did not talk very well. This is when the problem occurred. So they are actually, they were fighting, and actually we apprehended them and we put them to police. So they are under investigation now. When I had the problem, I heard that these people, they divided themselves based on the section in board over there. There are people of Akudi, and there are people of Anur.
The standoff between Bishop Ruben Akurdi and YCS Primate Justin Badi Arama began in August 2020 when Badi Arama fired Akurdi from his post as Archbishop of Jonglei Internal Province and the Bishop of Diocese Bor after he established the three additional dioceses of Makwach, Anyidi and Kolnyang within the Jonglei Internal Province without consulting other church officials. Arama appointed Bishop Moses Anur to replace Akurdi, who was expected to retire due to his age. But Akurdi filed a case in Juba's High Court challenging his dismissal. The court dismissed the case and referred it to a church tribunal for settlement. Colonel John Boltiar, the Awerial County Police Inspector, confirms fighting broke out during a church service. He says police and other organized forces arrested more than 10 suspects, including members of the clergy. Colonel Tiar says the suspects are still under police investigations.
The situation is calm now. From that day up to now, there's nothing more that happened. After the suspects and those involved in the violence were arrested, the commissioner has directed us to have all of them arrested and to be investigated as to what caused the violence. I am now doing the investigation so that those found innocent will be released. The reason for the fighting is not very clear.
Commissioner Geng says he was disappointed with the behavior of the IDPs. He says church leaders should promote peaceful coexistence among residents of Minkaman IDP camp and the Awerial community.
It is something sad, very sad, because they are the ones preaching the word of peace. They are the ones preaching don't kill and don't make a mistake and don't do bad things. And it happened now to be the church to lead that. Is completely bad because they are the leaders who are supposed to help us on promoting peace, promoting to tell people that don't use hate speech. But they are the one now to who start that. You are like a doctor who tells people that don't smoke, and later on is the one to begin to start smoking.
David Akau, Bishop of the Awerial Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, condemned Sunday's incident. Akau says he will investigate the incident and take some disciplinary measures against the church leaders who instigated the violence.
Those who caused that conflict within the church, they are going to be disciplined. So we are going to make some process. We are going to make some investigation. So when we got the people who actually caused that conflict within the church, we are going to discipline them. So we are not going to leave them aside. So we have to discipline them to show some people that we are not here just to come to church to pray, but we have a system. And our system said, go to church to pray, respect yourself, and then respect your God, and also respect others.
Bishop Akau says Sunday's violence is the first of its kind in Minkaman since displaced persons from Bor resettled in the area following the 2013 conflict and floods in 2020. Bishop Akau urges the IDPs to remain calm and embrace peace in the new year. Members of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan in Jonglei State are divided, with Bishop Akurdi supporters calling themselves independent ECS. those allied to Bishop Moses Anur and Archbishop Justin Badiarama are running a parallel administration. Some Anglican members from the two groups have confronted each other, including a gunfight. In December 2020, two young men were wounded during an exchange of gunfire after police tried to close the Langbarbi church in Bor. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, cases of the Omicron COVID-19 variant continue to surge around the world. Find out more after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at COVID-19 surge in 2022. The fifth wave of the coronavirus pandemic continues moving across the world, infecting the vaccinated and the unvaccinated alike. The newest variant, Omicron, has already led to thousands of flight cancellations in the United States in the new year. U.S. President Joe Biden has promised to make available 500 million rapid tests as American schoolchildren return to class. VOA's Arish Arabsati has more.
More than 9,200 U.S. domestic and international flights were delayed or canceled on New Year's Day due to bad weather and surging cases of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. That's according to the flight tracking website FlightAware.com. By Sunday, another 2,200 flights met the same fate. Chicago's O'Hare Airport was packed.
Last year, I was traveling. There was no one here, which was kind of eerie. So I like to see the people, but this is a lot of people.
While the Omicron variant appears less likely to cause severe illness, U.S. President Joe Biden's chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, warned spiking infections threaten the entire healthcare system.
Even if you have a less of a percentage of severity, when you have multi-fold more people getting infected, the net amount is you're still going to get a lot of people that are going to be needing hospitalization. And that's the reason why we're concerned about stressing and straining the hospital system.
As school children in the U.S. return to classes this week, Fauci's message remains clear.
I plead with parents to please seriously consider vaccinating your children, wearing masks in the school setting, doing test-to-stay approaches when children get infected. I think all of those things put together, it's safe enough to get those kids back to school.
New York City's new mayor, Eric Adams, who was sworn in on Saturday, tells ABC's This Week that the nation's biggest city is ready for school to restart.
We're going to create a safe environment with testing. We're going to identify the children that are exposed. We're going to remove them from that environment. The numbers show the mere fact that a child is exposed in a classroom does not mean that an entire classroom is exposed.
Adams takes office as New York City grapples with record numbers of cases driven by the Omicron variant. Classes resume Monday there and around the country. Arash Arabsati, VOA News.
Still on health matters, on the 40th anniversary of a famous skin cancer campaign, research has revealed that a high number of young Australians are not using sun protection. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Australia has one of the highest rates of skin cancer in the world. A new multi-million dollar awareness campaign hopes to repeat the success of the Slip Slop Slap advertisement of the early 1980s.
The sun's shining down, the sun desperate to brown, but skin cancer isn't so hot. No, it's not. So if you take a run or work in the sun, should you sizzle like a sausage? Most certainly not. Be
Sid the Seagull, the voice of the advertisement's jingle, urged Australians to protect themselves from the sun with a shirt, sunscreen and a hat. It is an enduring message that's educated generations of people since it was released 40 years ago. But the government believes rates of skin cancer are too high. The disease kills about 1,300 Australians each year. Research has shown that more than a quarter of Australians don't use any protection from the sun's ultraviolet radiation. Heather Walker from the charity The Cancer Council says teenagers need to be reminded of the sun's dangers.
We do have a lot of work to do, particularly in the secondary school setting and with young adults. But encouragingly, older adults are using sun protection more. So it does seem to be a dip in the life cycle, and then people come back to sun protection, which is really encouraging. But the other group that needs a reminder in particular is men. So in Australia, twice as many men as women die from melanoma, and that's a huge disparity.
Now Australia is launching the first national skin cancer campaign in more than a decade. Sid the Seagull's famous slip, slop, slap message has been updated to encourage Australians to also seek shade and slide on a pair of sunglasses. Health authorities have said that skin cancer is Australia's most common cancer and is almost entirely preventable. The World Cancer Research Fund states that Australia has the highest melanoma rates in the world, followed by New Zealand, Norway and Denmark. It's expected that 16,000 Australians will be diagnosed this year with melanoma, a malignant tumour associated with skin cancer, according to government figures. The Australian Cancer Council lists three main types of skin cancers: basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, and melanoma. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Kenyan conservationist and fossil hunter Richard Leakey died Sunday at the age of 77. Leakey's discoveries helped prove the mankind evolved. Kenyan conservationists who worked with him praised his pioneering work to protect the country's wildlife, especially elephants, from poachers. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
In a statement Monday, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta praised Leakey's contributions and said he served the country with distinction. Leakey was best known for his archaeological discoveries. In 1972 and 1975, he led an expedition that led to discovering of skulls of Homo habilis and Homo erectus, two early human ancestors. Paula Kahumbu is the head of Wildlife Direct, an animal conservation group that Leakey founded.
Richard Leakey's major contribution to the world actually was the uncovering of the important fossils all along in Turkana, on both the west side and the east side. And this work has led to courses now offered at the Turkana University and association with other international universities. So now we're seeing a real growth in the number of Kenyans working in the field of paleontology and archaeology. And now dozens of Kenyans and international scientists are working together on uncovering the human story. And every year they come up with new amazing discoveries.
In the 1990s, Leakey was appointed to lead the Kenya Wildlife Service. At the time, poachers were threatening the existence of animals in Kenya's national parks and other areas. Mordecai Ogada is a Kenyan conservation policy specialist. He says Leakey played a key role in ensuring the survival of the country's wildlife.
He was an important, a very important figure in the structuring of the conservation sector as it is today. Because before that, obviously, it was the game department which was riddled with all sorts of inefficiencies. So the structured KWS that exists today is very much his a product of his ideas and his efforts. So when he started KWS, obviously, wildlife crime was a huge problem here and a threat to wildlife. And back then, I think conservation was very much like a war to be fought.
Leakey successfully persuaded then-President Daniel Arap Moi to ban the sale of the elephant tusk confiscated from poachers and traders, sending a message that Kenya would not tolerate the wildlife trade. Ogada, however, says Leakey struggled when science was needed in the KWS operations.
There are more complex challenges that came up that exist in conservation, including policy issues, invasive species, habitat loss, more scientific problems that obviously Dr. Leakey was not really equipped to face head on, and I think this is where his tenure ran into problems when we needed to bring science to the fore and it was outside his comfort zone.
In 1999, President Moi appointed Leakey as the head of public service amid widespread complaints about corruption and political intolerance. Political commentator Michael Aguada said Leakey formed the Serafina Party, a sign he opposed Moi's regime.
At one point or another, perhaps disagreed with the president in principle, and that's why he decided that it was not time for him to join KANU, but to start his own political party. That in itself is a pointer to the fact that he must have not agreed with the president in many, many decisions, and therefore he thought that perhaps starting his own party will give him a leverage to express himself without being confined to a political party that the president was running.
In 2015, Kenyatta brought back Leakey as a board member to the Kenya Wildlife Service to help as Africa face another wave of poaching. He served for 3 years. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with Freedom Boys and the song Mama Sarah.
Bitu Brothers, Maski and Freedom Boys, Nam, Mina, WJI, Timoga, let them know. I am. Go. Na na na.
Sora fata lechua, ala makalela, binti kunwe narubayo, ala makalela, ana suta mazotani, ana makalela, mama sora fata lechua,
ala makalela. One more step, give say say. No kai inta jai pi bed bitai. So di japa
sora fata lechua. Ana makalela, binti kunwe narubayo. Ana makalela, ana suta mazotani. Ana makalela, mama sora fata lechua. Ana makalela,
oh mama sora,
mama sora,
malu inta zede. Ana Marigal, itaya bikolana, aburaste, asa inti biga bige simu sambala. Mimi adikulu mama sora, kamsi inge shilu barade. Waita kan from izana, nalita bikun marataya. Mika gige ni kambasu ita bekurus, ashan ana meskin mama sora, mabi muskula, rabuna biwadi, leana tani. Kamasu ana zede mama, bukora ita bisekiri muhaba, tangina de, ya.
Mama sora, fata lechua.
We have been listening to the Freedom Boys and their song, Mama Sara. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.